Get exclusive content you just can't wait to hear. Hit us with your feedback. We want to know how you feel. So download the Shiny Radio. Get it free from the App Store. Download the Shiny Radio. See our features and much more. Download the Shiny Radio app for free now.
Welcome to the Patrice Brantley Show, where helping others is the name of the game. And on this show, we push purpose, positivity, and personal growth. Honey, today we're going to have some kitchen table talk about mental health. And I have the pleasure of sitting down with Dr. Tanya Williams, who's going to be sharing her viewpoint on what it means to have dealing with mental health in the African-American community, where our stigmas are, where we need to be honest with ourselves, and what this really needs to happen in our community as a whole when it comes to mental health. Welcome, Dr. Tanya.
Well, Patrice, thank you so much for having me on your show. When I saw the message, I couldn't help but jump on to help further the education of mental illness and mental health, which is a big buzzword now. So I am elated to be here today.
Thank you.
And by the way, you said you push people forward. That's the name of my ministry, is Push Ministry. So we're pushing and praying until something happens.
Amen. All right, now go ahead with that. We're gonna push till something happens. I like that.
Amen.
What I love about this conversation we're about to have today, I really want to go behind the nice little mental health. I want to talk about what's real in the community and how we can be honest with ourselves on what we can do to help us heal in the area of mental health. So I want to kind of be a little nosy. What's your story? Is your story connected to mental health, either by dealing with someone with mental health or yourself?
Oh, well, it's totally connected to all of that. Well, my story starts with my mom has dementia. My grandmother had dementia. My grandfather had dementia, which is all a mental illness, which we as African-Americans don't really realize. But then furthering that, I had served in the military for 26 years. And from that, I've been diagnosed with mental illnesses such as PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress syndrome, and chronic depression, major depression. So it's prevalent in my life. I've had several individuals in my family that have been not diagnosed, but suffer from different mental illnesses. And I say not diagnosed because a lot of the African-American community don't believe in going to see a counselor. They don't feel like that they need counseling or therapy. They feel like they can pray it away.
So I want to go a little deeper right there, because when I was actually in college at the point of going in for mental health, because my first degree is in education, I went in and I'll never forget something that one of my professors said to me. He says, I love to see African-American clients. He said, because you all helped to build my second and third home. What? Mm-hmm. And the reason that he said this is because we wait till it gets so bad that it turns into physical ailments. Mm-hmm. And not be honest with ourselves. And I love what you just said. You said we have a tendency to think we could just pray it away. And what I always tell my clientele, you can have Jesus in your therapist. You can have Jesus in the psychiatrist. You can have Jesus in your meds. That doesn't negate one from the other. And I feel like we have done a big disservice to ourselves in the community because we're so busy saying, well, that's not us, you know. And the one thing that really burns me up, it burns and burdens my toes when we do this. I'm not crazy. I said you're crazy. Mm-hmm. You've gone through a trauma and you need to talk about it. Mm-hmm. How was that experience for you? When did you realize, hey, I might want to talk to somebody?
It started with I had a, if I can be very transparent, I was dealing with a very bad situation when I was on active duty, where the men, because I was in predominantly male unit, and the men were harassing me because I was female. Then the leaders were harassing me because I was Black and a female. And then I had those who decided they wanted to take advantage of me sexually. So I was sexually assaulted a couple times by one of my supervisors and some of my coworkers. That caused a severe trauma in me that I felt like everybody was against me. All male were problematic, or they were the cause of my issues, which in turn led to me having issues with alcoholism and prescription drugs, and to the point where I attempted to take my life. And if this part was spiritual, if it was not for God saving me by having my pastor, who lived around the corner from me, come to my house the moment that I was getting ready to ingest the pills, I would not be here today. So that's where it started. It escalated by with anger issues, because then I became the angry Black woman, as they quoted.
Wait a minute. Your trauma literally became what I call a complex trauma. Yes. It started in one way, mm-hmm. and just as you thought you were moving past that way, another door opened, right. and more door opens. And as mm-hmm. this got to the point, it escalated in ways that I don't think people realize escalation is so easy to happen.
People think it's
to the point where you decided your life was not worth it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it took that was not the first time that I attempted my life, because of the mental illness, and not I was given medication after. I didn't actually seek help until I was driving with one of my daughters, and she and I got into an argument, and the argument was something that was minute, and I exploded. And my daughter looked at me, and the hurt in her eyes and disappointment in her eyes, she says, "Mommy, I don't know." And she's an adult, and she was an adult then, but she said, "I don't know what is going on, but you need to talk to somebody. You need to get some help." And I get emotional about that part, because I realized that in all of my illnesses, I was hurting my family and my children. And I said I wasn't gonna do this. but every time I tell my story, it brings back some not healed things, but I'm healed from it, but it's just the hurt that I caused other people because of my illnesses and not willing to acknowledge it and get help. And so after she told me that, I went to the VA. We had moved back home to Mississippi, and I had been discharged from the military, and honorably discharged, by the way. And I went to the VA, and I went to a what they call it was a HUD VASH, is what they call.
It's HUD like, VASH.
It was like the HUD office had offered this program for homeless vets. I didn't consider myself homeless, but I just went, you know, just to go. And when I realized that, hey, by talking to one of the therapists, you're homeless, and you may live with someone, but because you don't have an address in anything in your name, you're homeless. So that, long story short, I ended up going to therapy, and I ended up actually working for the VA and as a peer support specialist, because that's just the peer therapist. Didn't have a license at the time, and I was there to tell my story and help others overcome some of the things, hearing it from a peer. And in that, I realized that some of the things that the individuals I was providing counseling for, I had actually experienced, and I had buried it so far down that I thought I was good, you know, because I'm a Christian. I'm a firm believer of Christ. And at that time, I had been ordained for several years as a pastor. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm good. God got me. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm an intercessor. I'm a prayer warrior, this, that, and it's third. And realized, wow, some of the things that they're going through, I went through. And then I went back to my therapist and she said, I was waiting on you to come and talk to me about it because I saw it in you when we first talked. And she said, when you first came to me, you came to check the block because they required you to come. Yeah. You came because that was part of the precursor of you getting assistance. But now that you're ready, open to receive help, I can help you.
So what I love about you sharing this is just it's so many layers. Mm-hmm. And what I love about it is that you hit and talk about what it was like going into the VA, like you said, checking the boxes and then turning around and really realizing that it wasn't just a box check. Mm-hmm. This was time for me to really utilize this resource that was there. And then not just to utilize the resource, you came back and became a helping hand, not a hand out, but a mm-hmm. hand up to many mm-hmm. others who had already been going through these things. And not realizing how powerful just you being there in that seat made a difference for those people walking in the door, your fellow veterans walking in the door. Wow. Y'all, listen, she done got so deep already, I'm about in tears. Listen here now. As you're talking about this, I'm blown because for so many people who are in the church, the first thing we do, like you said, is that prayer away mentality. And for you to go to someone else and be honest enough and truly vulnerable enough and open enough to say, I'm used to being in the driver's seat, because that's usually, especially in African-American church, we assume that every pastor, every preacher, everybody who got a title is so together. Mm-hmm. And I hate to say it, we kind of thrust that on other people mm-hmm. instead of just saying they're human too. They got some stuff they need to talk about.
Right. And you know, that's so critical nowadays, because so many pastors, they are going through things and don't have any avenue to share, because one, people come to them for help, and you know, they expect the pastor to be the end all be all. And they also, you know, when they go to their friends, it's like, well, man, you know, you good, you know, just shake it off. It's time for you to get over that. It's you know, it wasn't that. What compare? I had one pastor friend compare to the cross. You know,
compare what to the cross,
right? What you're going wow. through, compared to the cross. Nothing is too hard for God, and so. Many pastors find themselves, and this is why we have so many pastors now committing suicide, is yes. because they don't have, I'm sorry, hold on, my battery's going out here. Let me get to the battery source. But while I'm talking, but they have no outlet for them to go to. And while they don't have that that outlet, they get lost, you know, and they have a sense of loss and don't have anywhere to go to for that. And so as they go through that, they tend to give up, because I'm here for everybody. I'm here for my parents. I'm here for my friends. I'm here for those that are in my congregation. And then who's here for me?
You bring up a good point, but I'm going to pause for a second, because as you're talking about this, I just think about this article I read some years ago about this pastor in California who went and had a humongous church, and people spoke about, you know, how great this man was. Mm-hmm. But in his letter, he wrote he just wanted someone to be there for him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such an eye-opening article to me, because so many people don't realize those who are helping others, they need somebody they can lean on and get some help too.
Right.
And it's just, having this conversation is just doing a lot for me right now, more than you even know, because so many people don't get it. The caregiver needs somebody to care for them. The counselor needs somebody to counsel them. You need these people, and these people need other people as well to be connected in for them.
Absolutely.
What were you spoke about how people kind of spoke about, man, just get over it. What was the biggest, dare I say, obstacle to you walking through those doors and saying, now I need help? What was that obstacle?
Myself. And again, listening to and the upbringing that I had, because, you know, coming from a family of strong Black women and coming from a line of pastors and ministers and people of the cloth, a lot of public figures in the ministry, in the community, you know, everybody was strong, you know, and they counted on the strong one to, and you had to shake, you know, you had to be that person. You had to have look like you had to get. So I had a lot of masks that I had on to hide what I was really feeling. To this day, my children tell me, "Mine's nothing wrong with you." Well, you know, you may not think so, because I never let you see what was going on with me. Mm-hmm. You receive the outward manifestations of what was going on in my heart and what was going on in my soul. And you just chopped it up with, she's just mad right now. And she's mom, and she's, you know, whatever. But I was my biggest obstacle, because I say it just like everybody else, the stigma that goes with it. There's nothing wrong with me. You know, I got it. You know, I can make it. And still, yet and still, my life was falling apart. It was falling apart. And I didn't realize it. And you know how they say, the old people say, you biting your nose off in spite of your nose.
You biting your nose in spite of your face.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was doing, because I was not actually seeing what was going on, because I was so close into it. And I saw myself. It was nothing wrong with me. You know, I've been dealing with myself for this number of years, and it was nothing wrong with me. So I didn't think I needed help until that day when she told me. She was like, "Well, Mom, I don't even know why we're arguing, and you need to get some help." So
I'm going to go a little deeper. I want to ask a question, because do you feel like some of the stereotypes and some of the things that we carry, like, I'll give an example. I grew up hearing, you know, strong Black women, never let them see you cry, you know, no mm-hmm. matter what goes on. And even it's even a movement that somebody sent me a reel this morning and said, "You need to see this." And it talked about the soft movement. Mm. And it's a young lady. I don't know her name, but she's one of the people on the reel, and she makes this statement: "I would love to be soft." Mm-hmm. And she says, "I would love to be soft, but the world has not afforded me mm-hmm. to be soft."
Mm-hmm.
So she says in this, "I would love to be able to be a part of this soft movement. I just need somebody to teach me how."
That's it.
And it was such a powerful statement, because to me, I'm thinking, okay, well, everybody's been like this. You know, I think we've just gotten accustomed to it. Mm-hmm. Of having to be that person.
Mm-hmm. That's true. The stigma of mental illness in itself. I have an aunt that's a certified nurse, and she's been a nurse for all my life. And she worked for the VA, and I was discussing with her, and she's a minister. I was working with her and asking, you know, just talking to her about some things. And she said, "Well, you know, they just need to, get a life, you know, get a grip. Some of them just need, because again, most of the people I deal with now are children. They just need to be spanked. Well, that stigma of mental illness in our community, we're at a place where we've not been educated enough about mental illnesses, because all we hear about is like in the Bible, when the man that had lesions, and he jumped into the fire. Continue to
talking about the demonic, the money, the money, and Matthew.
Right.
Okay. Gotcha.
That jumped into the fire. He kept jumping into the fire. But in actuality, if we look at that, he had a mental illness, and that mental illness was. And although he may have, and there may have been a spiritual part, and so all my pastor friends out there, so don't go jumping on me about this, but there was some spiritual issues going on too, but all yet and still, there was a mental illness that was happening too. So when you deal with stigma, because nobody wants to look bad, nobody wants to be included in a box, because we've grown up so much to say, you know, back in the day when someone had a mental illness or some kind of problem, they put them away in an asylum, and they forgot about them, because you made the family look bad, you made the leaders of the family look bad, you made the community look bad, instead of dealing with what was really going on with that person, because that person just may have been hurt, and we wouldn't listen. And it dealing with mental illness, you have to really be you have to be a good active listener. And so no one was that for me, because even my mom was saying, it's nothing wrong with you. You just tired. You just this, you just that. But when I started telling her my story, that didn't happen to you.
Oh, wow. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
So not only were we not hearing what you were saying and not being active and listening,
right,
you weren't even willing to acknowledge the pain.
Right. Right. I can, in my family today, I cannot ever acknowledge that I was hurt at any point in time, or I was I had a mental illness, or I had a addiction problem. That's not me. Me, because I am a pastor, I can't acknowledge that. So even because see, the first time I was raped was when I was in high school. And when I started to tell my mom about it, it was several years later when I told her. I was an adult, like after I had been through several years of counseling, till I got to that point, because they made me afraid and ashamed of what I was experiencing. That just don't happen to us. It's what my mom said. That just don't happen to us. You must have did something. No, I didn't. I didn't. So yeah, that stigma is something that we in this community we don't deal with well. We don't.
So what are some of the things? Because I mean, as you're talking, I'm hearing so many things that I've heard as a kid just kind of come back to me. What are some of the things that you're doing actively to break this stigma?
Okay, so as I am a therapist for at-risk youth right now, they're considered at-risk because they're juveniles and they have a felony between the ages of 8 and 17, and they have mental illness and they have drug addiction problems. Me as a therapist, I am trying to make them understand and make our community at large understand that the mental illness is not the person, it's a condition. And the mental illness does not make that person. It's still an illness, just as we would treat diabetes, cancer, a heart failure, any other kind of disease or illness. we should do the same for mental illness. Right now, I'm in the process of opening a therapy center, which has dealt with equine therapy and animal therapy, because it is found that if you have something that you can care for and show that you are responsible to care for them or that thing, you can heal inside and you can begin to heal, because by you showing love to that thing that's on the outside or the exterior stimuli, you can begin to receive love yourself. So we are in the planning stages and laying out the groundwork to open the center. And it will be a ranch center, so that they will be residential. They can come in and stay, or they can do outpatient. And we will use the animals and the horses and dogs and some whatever kind of animals my therapist choose. We can use those as emotional and therapeutic animals, so that they can begin to use like mindfulness techniques and different evidence-based techniques to help see that, hey, I'm worth it as well as this thing I'm taking care of. So that's just one of the avenues that I'm going.
So how can people reach out to you? Because I don't want them to miss out, because I want to talk about one more thing before we wrap. How can people reach out to you?
Oh, I'm on Facebook, Dr. Pastor Tanya Williams, or I am, my email address is tanya.williams4682@gmail.com. Or Pastor Tanya Williams at pushmenworld.org.
So I'm going to give you a chance to give us our last words, I should say. Our final thoughts, I should say. Let me do that, not last words, final thoughts. So for you, what's your final thoughts when you talk to somebody, young man, young lady, coming in, talking about they want to step into mental health, they want to know how to get the help? What's your final words?
Okay, so are you asking for them coming to me for help, or they wanted to actually do therapy?
Coming to get help.
Okay. The first thing I want to share with anyone is that they're worth therapy. They're worth being loved. And even though, no matter what the situation that they're going through, they're worth it. You know, it's more than just a job for me. And I tell my students all the time. And as a matter of fact, I don't call them clients. I call them students, because they're learning. So I tell them, you know, this is more than a job for me, because I've done it for free for years. And I will go to the nth degree for you to make sure you understand that you're worth the love of someone positive. So making them feel safe as well, and creating a safe environment for them, because many of the times when they've gone through traumatic experiences, that has caused them to lose trust in people, lose trust in things. So, which is a critical task if we look at Eric Erickson's hierarchy of learning. And I equated both to I did Maslow and Eric Erickson, but his stages of development, I should say, that the first one is the first critical task is trust versus mistrust. So if I can help them trust again, then I'm successful. And not so much as being a citizen in the community, but if I can trust, then I can be that citizen that you expect. So it's just that making sure that they understand that when they come to a facility or wherever they're receiving therapy, that first they're loved, first they it's going to be a safe environment, and they won't hear their business out in the street, and that they will be able to receive all that they need, just giving them that element so that they can learn to trust again.
Y'all, I couldn't ask for a better conversation today. Thank you for joining me for this session of Kitchen Table Talk with Dr. Tanya Williams. I love this. We gotta have her back, baby. She done gave me so much. Y'all know she done fed me good like a fat girl. That's fabulous and thick. Get into it. Listen, y'all join me next week for the Patrice Bradley Show, where we push purpose and positivity and personal growth. You all have an amazing day.
Get exclusive content you just can't wait to hear. Hit us with your feedback. We want to know how you feel. So download the Shiny Radio. Get it free from the App Store. Download the Shiny Radio. See our features and much more. Download the Shiny Radio app for free now.